Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, the political columnist for Rhode Island Monthly, Ellen Lieberman. Thanks for joining us, Ellen.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me back.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Angel Tavares has the highest approval rating, 57%, in a new poll this week from WPRI-TV and the Providence Journal. The comparable figure for Gina Raimondo is 51%, and Republican Alan Fung had the third best approval rating at 47%. Tavares also topped the poll on the question of who would do best on improving the economy. To me, though, this poll has some good news for Tavares. The findings mostly suggest that this governor's race is wide open. What do you say, Maureen?
Well, I say the first thing we have to realize is this was a poll of the general electorate. And as we know, the really important thing is going to be how these primaries shape out. So we can glean from that that Tavares is doing well among the voters who are most likely to vote in the Democratic primary. But we have a long way to go in terms of translating that into a victory. And that's the big contest that we really don't have a handle on.
Ellen, as we know, most voters in Rhode Island are independents, neither Democrats nor Republicans. So how do you see this shaking out?
Well, I mean, I agree with Maureen. It's going to be a very dynamic race. And we can game out all kinds of scenarios based on a lot of very shifting factors. And I think at this early stage, those numbers don't mean a whole heck of a lot.
Scott, what are your takeaways from this poll?
A couple of things. One, I was very surprised that Joe Fleming, the veteran pollster, did not do a primary matchup. He's pretty good at doing that kind of thing, just giving people a look at the head-to-head this far out. Now, I do know it's almost a year away, so that might not be the most accurate thing we've ever seen. However, Gina Raimondo still has the money advantage, and a pretty significant one, over the Providence Mayor Tavares. And then you have the X-Factor, Clay Pell. And we have Tavares, who probably has a slight edge in public opinion. So this is something that we love in Rhode Island as our great spectator sport. This one looks like a very competitive race.
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me is if Clay Pell does get in and he's supported by progressives and labor unions, it seems to me it hurts Tavares, which I think would be their next best choice. So really, I'm interested in watching that because that's going to play out in a very interesting way.
Well, speaking of Clay Pell, Rhode Island Public Radio was first to report this week how Pell had filed a notice of organization to run for governor. The 32-year-old is the grandson of the late longtime U.S. Senator Claiborne Pell, and he has the star power that comes with being married to former Olympic skater Michelle Kwan. Ellen, what's your sense of how Pell changes the dynamic of what had been expected to be a two-way Democratic primary between Angel Tavares and Gina Raimondo?
I agree that he is going to draw votes from the mayor of Providence. I think that he's been trying to establish his credibility with the unions. I understand he's been going around doing events. And I think that his entrance into the primary is good news for Gina Raimondo.
Do you agree, Scott?
Yes, it could well be. Certainly, given the fact that there's two men there, the dynamic of having one incredible woman candidate against two men certainly would think would help her. One thing, however, that Pell can probably do is get the money you need. Money's not everything in politics, but it's a lot of things, and you need $2 million to run a competitive gubernatorial race with a tight primary like this. My suspicion is that Pell can probably get the money.
Pell is a very good candidate, at least on paper, but do you see his age of being 32 years old being an issue, Maureen?
Yes, I do. And the more interesting thing here related to that is when we introduce Pell right now, we told who his grandfather was and who his wife was. Who is he? And I think that's going to be the critical question that's going to have to get answered, particularly with no political experience and being just 32.
Exactly. I don't think it's so much his age as
the experience.
Roger Williams Law School professor Jorge Alorza on Monday formally announced his Providence mayoral campaign. The other Democrats expected to run include City Council President Michael Solomon, consultant Brett Smiley, businessman Lauren Adrian, and quite possibly former longtime City Councilor John Lombardi, who's now a state representative. Alorza grew up in the West End as the son of Guatemalan immigrants. He says that because of that, issues like schools, neighborhoods, and jobs are more than just talking points to him. Scott, how do you think Alorza stacks up as a mayoral candidate?
Well, I think he's trying to be the AAA Angel Taveras. Now, we'll see if that works out. The difference is, again, he hasn't raised any money. A lot of people don't know who he is. On the plus side, he's a very well-educated fellow, and he's very, very engaging, and I think he wants to do it, but the rest of this thing's a scrum. Let's face it, we don't know what the field looks like. There's still talk of Buddy Cianci, of all people, and John Lombardi. I think the leader in the clubhouse right now is Michael Solomon, just because he knows people. He's president of the city council, and he won't be outworked and he won't be outspent. But other than that, this is a fascinating race that just hasn't gelled yet.
Maureen, there are two Eastsiders in the race in the form of Brett Smiley and Lauren Adrian, and only one Latino in the form of Lorza. And as Scott said, Mike Solomon has jumped out with a big fundraising lead, and John Lombardi has strong name recognition. How do you break it down?
Well, I tend to agree with what Scott said. I mean, Alosa is a very talented candidate, but he's got to get beyond his Latino base. And with all these other players in the race, it makes it really difficult. I mean, the idea that either John Lombardi, if he gets in, or Buddy Cianci could walk down the middle, given five people in the race, is definitely a possibility.
Ellen, you're a proud South County resident. What's the view from there on the Providence mayoral race?
Well, we're hanging on every development down in South County. But we're mostly hoping that Buddy keeps his current job and that we could watch some candidates go to take over the capital city who might move Providence forward.
This week marks the 50th anniversary of that fateful day when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas. Ellen, what are your reflections on the 50th anniversary?
Well, I'm sorry to say I do remember the day when Kennedy was shot. And I was discussing this with my mother the other night, and she told me something interesting that reminded me of sort of the tenor of the times. And that was during the Cuban Missile Crisis, how our small neighborhood got together to build a bomb shelter for the entire neighborhood. And this touched off a lot of intense discussions about who would be allowed in. And they went so far as to map out a place and buy some steel ship doors. But in addition to the great fears, there was a lot of inspiration and a lot of hope for young people. And that is what I miss. I mean, as we look back at Kennedy, from the point of view of today, Camelot was exactly that, a fairy tale. But still, there was an inspiration there that I think is missing these days.
Maureen, how do you think the country was changed by the assassination of JFK?
Well, I think one essential thing was what Kennedy did was he actually got to the point where Catholic politicians were accepted. That's a very big deal. We had Al Smith. He was not accepted for cultural as well as religious reasons. And particularly here in the Northeast, there are a lot of mobilized Democrats, and it really legitimized their place among these ethnic groups in politics. And I think that's a really critical thing.
Scott, you had a great essay on our air and on our website last week about JFK's associations with Rodin. What are your reflections on the 50th anniversary of his death?
One of the things that I'm really interested in is how he goes from a cold warrior, a real almost bellicose politician, if you look at his inaugural, bear any burden, fight any fight. And then within 2 years later, after the Cuban Missile Crisis and after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, you have a man, a president of the United States, who gets the first nuclear test ban treaty, the first limits on nuclear weapons that ever happened. And, you know, his legacy then after the missile crisis, the way he handled that, and I think the nuclear test ban treaty is, I think he was looked upon as someone who really wanted peace and was working to forge peace in the world at the time of his death. Now, other questions remain open. What would have happened with Vietnam? Who knows?
There are many conspiracy theories about what happened on that day in Dallas. What is your view of what happened, Scott?
Well, you know, a lot of people say it's the biggest unsolved murder of the 20th century. And I don't really know what happened. If I did, I probably wouldn't be here. But one thing people point to is that this is the start of what we know as the 60s, a decade of turmoil when Americans, because of Kennedy's assassination, then Vietnam, and of course then Watergate, really begin to lose faith in government and our institutions. And this looks like the first real big event in that very sad trail.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And from Rhode Island Monthly, Ellen Lieberman.
Thank you for having me.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at rapr.org.